This is the Tech Talk for Accountants show with your host, Andrew Lassise, where every week we have a new guest to discuss the latest technology, apps, tips, and tricks to help you improve your accounting firm. This episode is brought to you by Tech for Accountants, an IT firm that specializes in cybersecurity for the small accounting firm. Many of our clients used to work at big firms that had all this crazy security and then went to work for themselves. And while they knew it was important to have great IT security, they just have too many other things to worry about and don't have enough time to actually learn this stuff. What we do is help bridge the gap so that even small accounting firms have great security at a fraction of the cost of doing it themselves, and it's all done for you. We offer listeners to the show a complimentary IT audit and consultation. Just go to tech4accountants.net/podcast. And you can book a free IT audit. Again, that's tech4accountants.net/podcast. Alrighty, and we are live once again with another episode of the Tech Talk for Accountants show. And I'm your host, Andrew Lassise with Tech for Accountants, IT specializing in the accounting industry. And with us today, we have Will Hill, the owner of Will Hill Consults. And he's been serving the tax and accounting profession for over 20 years and was just recently recognized by Accounting Today as one of the top influencers in the profession. So, Will, thank you so much for being on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. Great to be here.
So, give us a little background on what it is that you're doing in the technology space and who are the people that you're serving.
Yeah. So, the people I'm serving, mostly, of course, owners and leaders of tax accounting firms, and do a couple different things. Sometimes I will do workflow consulting. We'll look at the tools that are in place, some of the obstacles that they've got in their way, problems they're trying to solve. And our first area of emphasis is not always, hey, let's change the technology, but deciphering, is that a tech problem? Is that a people problem? Sometimes those have a similar symptomology, but really understanding where some of the root cause is coming from and what are we trying to accomplish by changing anything as we go. I also work with some firms, sometimes work with a little bit larger firms. We work on tech solutions and choices. Hey, we're debating between these two programs, or we've made a choice to shift to another tool. Can you help us manage that process of making that change happen effectively within our firm? So those are the types of things around technology that I'm doing, Andrew.
And I've fallen into the trap myself of anytime there is an issue, this was more so in the past, because I've learned as I've gone along in my years of doing this. So the reluctance to change, you know, when I was brand new in it, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, buy this, buy that, we can fix this with that. And okay, we're having an issue here, like let's buy this, and having an issue there, and let's buy this. And then I had 70 different SaaS products, nothing talked to each other. There was no central point of truth. And then we would come to find out, yes, we purchased this product for this one particular issue. However, if you just dug a little deeper in what you already had, you could have gotten a 95% solution right there, not had any growing pains, not had any. So I'm curious, when you first come in and you said, you know, you're looking at what's currently there, is that one of the things that you're trying to diagnose that I wish you told me 9 years ago was what you should be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And it really actually doesn't start with what's there. It actually starts with where do you want to go? So just understanding what are you trying to achieve? And then we look at what's there. And I think that's part of the beauty of having someone come from the outside is that there is not the emotional attachment or disenfranchisement with what is already there. You know, there's been several times where I go and I speak to the person who's in charge of the IT at a particular firm and say, hey, we think we need to change this. We're really upset with a vendor, or we're frustrated that it won't work in a certain way. But the reality is the tool does what they need, and they've got to make a choice to either get over the mental and psychological hurdles for that, or frankly, they say, you know what? We know that it's going to cause more disruption to change. However, the mental baggage, quote unquote, is so strong with our key players that we've got to make a change to another tool that's going to do the same thing, but that will help produce buy-in for daily use and getting the objective, right? So there's two sides of that. Sure, it is cheaper and faster to stay with what you have if it's going to solve the problem and if it really can solve that issue. But and there are times I will admit that the frustration and, like I said, that mental baggage is so strong that a firm says it is worth it for us to pay the price for transition because we're going to get buy-in from the team to go execute. And we just don't see how, given the current tool set and the perspective towards it, that we could get that buy-in today.
And on our side, one of the, just sort of anecdotally, some of the things that we've gone through. So for our engagements, for instance, we were using, and I don't even know, it's like, should I say the names or not? We'll just keep it agnostic. We'll say we were using a household name when it comes to document signatures, right? And it did the trick for what we were trying to accomplish early on. At the time, we were maybe sending one engagement every day, every other day. And okay, it was 5-10 minutes to put together each one. There wasn't a way to automate it through Zapier, which kind of blew my mind, but it is what it is. And so, you know, I was like, hey, we deal with this. It's 5 minutes here and there. Oh, whoops, we made a mistake on this one. There was a typo or something like that. Okay, couple minutes to fix. But as we started growing and started scaling, and then one every other day changed to one a day, changed to five a day, and now we're up to close to 15 a day, where those 5 minute things would be over an hour and a half of someone's day just sending out engagements. And so it's like we have to find a better solution for this. And so then we changed vendors that integrated with our CRM instead of just finding, let's get a new document signature alternative. We looked at what do we currently have and what will integrate and be easy, scalable, fast. And now we can get an engagement out in less than 1 minute and everything's perfect, assuming that the intake was done perfectly. But now, okay, new SaaS vendor, and you're thinking document signatures, all you have to do is just click. And then, but the new product has an issue that the old one didn't have. The old one, and we didn't discover this until we started getting issues coming. We had to find the commonalities, but we've discovered that our current vendor struggles to send to Yahoo email addresses. No rhyme or reason. It's Yahoo security. This is a publicly traded company. It's not some no name trying to like break its way in there. Publicly traded company, big deal, right? And it can't get to Yahoo. So we have to double fist now with the original one and the new one for, you know, it's like if Yahoo, then old one, take your time. But it's like the going through the process of change. And but it was easy to get the buy-in with, you know, how this used to take a while and now it doesn't. So getting that buy-in, that's an interesting point that I had never really taken into consideration, because it's just like, I'm spending way too much time doing this. I don't care how you all feel, but it actually, you're absolutely right.
We'll have a sidebar later and compare if you are also getting AOL email addresses.
I wasn't going to dig into it, but AOL, everyone under the Yahoo umbrella. So Yahoo, AOL, SBC Global, ATT.net. Yeah. The deliverability.
And what's interesting in that story there, Andrew, is that even though the deliverable in the work product is the same, in this case, the proposal, the needs change over time. And because, hey, now all of a sudden our volume is up, so efficiency really matters. So I want to pay a little bit more for efficiency as we get in. And I think that's one thing where, as a firm, you've got to really say, hey, what has changed in our landscape? Do we have a bunch more team members now? Have we grown the number of clients? Have we shifted the focus of our services? those changes tend to either put more light or less light on certain tools and problems slash opportunities, right? And so, yeah, a tool may have served you very well for a long period of time. That doesn't make it a, and now it doesn't. It doesn't make it a bad tool. Something didn't suddenly fail with that tool. It's just your current stage of business has now highlighted a different set of problems or opportunities. And so we have to evaluate the tool usage based on that. I think where firms really find themselves in trouble is they make a lot of shifts. Hey, we hired 5 or 6 staff persons 2 years ago, and now we're starting to look at our tool set. And it sometimes it becomes harder to identify the pain when you've waited a long time from a big shift because you've created all of the workarounds and put all the band-aids in place. You kind of feel like, I think it's working. I think we're kind of masking the pain.
is the greatest way to describe our workflow management. It gets the job done 100%. But if you look in the background at all the things that I've created, and I have a background in it. So, I mean, it's in my eyes, it's a lot more band-aid-y than on the surface level where it always just works. But in my eyes, it's but the end product, it's the rule of coding, of programming, right? If it always works, don't change it, even if it looks crazy on the back end.
Yeah, and I think we have to look at, you know, we're evaluating some of those areas of who's impacted here and what does that impact mean? Like, you know, from an accounting firm perspective, just because the main partner is impacted by something doesn't mean we should blow it all up and start over. And it may not be your favorite way to review a tax return, but if it is an ultra level of efficiency for all the preparers, that's a trade-off we have to take a look at, right? And so there is an impact across the board. So we have to understand, we think about what are we trying to achieve when we're evaluating the opportunity for change. We have to look at who's impacted. And maybe it's everybody, but it's only a minor amount because it's just related to entering time. Insert, should we enter time commentary here, right?
Yeah.
But okay, everybody, small amount, a couple people, a big amount. What role do they have? What touching and across impact would that have to other groups, other solutions? You already mentioned the integration piece and how do we tie things together? So it's the evaluation is much deeper than just, hey, should we look at this other product? It looks cool on social media. All my friends are using it.
Oh, that's the worst one. All my friends are using it. We had evaluated basically changing the foundation of everything that we had done. And just in the technology space, it's just, it is inevitable. Change is the only constant, blah, 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 you know, insert cliche. And so we were going to change the foundational software that we were going to use to do everything. And I had asked for the opinions on, you know, an IT Facebook group, like, what should I use for this, blah, 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 blah. And so it was basically like, here's the two leaders in the space. Like, it can do everything, launch a rocket to the moon and, you know, use this. It's going to take some time to get used to it. But once you do, it's great. Now, I severely underestimated it's going to take some time. I thought it's going to take some time meant 2 weeks. So 2 months into the program, and I've lived in it, hired a consultant. Like, this was not just a, I can't really figure it out, don't have time. It's, I was investing time. And then I was like, I have 15 other people I have to teach this to. And I'm fully on board wanting it to happen. It's been 2 months and I can't even explain it, and just nixed it because it was like, there's going to be so much, just so much headache in switching. And even though it was something that needed to happen, it was the foundation of how can we get everybody on board. And usually I am a function over fashion, like, let's get the thing that's the best of the best so we can launch a rocket to the moon. But, you know, then realized, yeah, you know, we're gonna go on long road trips, you know, in this analogy, but we're just going on long road trips. We are not launching a rocket to the moon. So having the ability to do that doesn't even serve us. And it adds so many layers of complication. Try another product that doesn't have as many bells and whistles. And it was like an hour later, it's like, oh, things can be easier. And so,
you know, I think we have to, your story brings up two points that I wrote down here. One is your perception of sunk cost, right? And so often we reach this point of, well, I made the decision to go with this product. I have sunk my time into it, some initial training dollars, maybe some initial licensing fees for a couple months while we trial and test it. And sometimes the pull of sunk cost is stronger than it should be, right? And so we have to continually evaluate, all right, is this sunk cost going to start trailing down, or is it just going to keep piling up, especially when it comes to time, right? You know, you mentioned it took me 2 months. I've got 15 people to train on this. Now, they may only have to use 20% of what I do, but what does that mean for them and for me in that, right? All of a sudden, my sunk cost is going to go up by another 50%, and we're still going to be frustrated. We need to look at the sunk cost differently. I think the other thing we have to look at is, yes, it takes a while to get used to the change of how anything works. And so my thought really is that you've got to get through what I'll call two cycles. People say, well, how long should it take me to get used to a new tool? The answer is it depends on the life cycle of what's happening in the tool. So I want to make sure that I get through two cycles. If it's a payroll system, that's a little bit faster than my, you know, annual W-2 reporting system. Okay, that's another payroll example. That's a terrible choice. But, you know, some other tool that we may use once a year or once a quarter, the runway for comfort is different because frequency is what matters, right? And so as you're working through a new tool and you don't see the light of day after two cycles, it may be time to kind of say, oof, where are we at? And people say, shouldn't I be more comfortable after I do it once? I don't think so. You know, we do once and we learn. And then that second time, we should be closer to an execution mode, and we should be able to see that growth happen from cycle one to cycle two and say, all right, I'm probably going to get another 10% efficiency in cycle three, maybe another 5% in cycle four, and that's where we'll be. How comfortable do I feel as I go through that? And I think that's something else where if you have the opportunity as a firm owner to say, hey, we got a trial period, or we negotiate with a vendor some time to run dual or test things out, what can you do to sneak in that second cycle, right? To really get a sense for the growth and acceleration of the change that could be happening for you.
Do you see when people are implementing new software and new technology? And this was something that we went into. It's funny you mentioned payroll, because this was a constant struggle for us. And now that we're on like our fifth payroll company, it's just like, oh, there's all these problems with it. And it's just like, we're not changing again. Like we're just sticking with these guys. Like everyone gives us problems. So like, we're just sticking with them. But whenever we would make the change, and I'm curious if I would assume that this is most people's experience, but so we have the old system, it's broken, but we know it. We have the new system that's allegedly better, but we don't know if we can trust what we're seeing. So we were double entering. We would do it the old way that we know got the results that we were expecting to get, and then did all the work all over on the new way to compare the results and see if they were comparable. Are other people going through that as well when they implement new technology?
I think where they can, they do. And one of the ways they'll kind of trick into the two cycles mechanism is to make one of the cycles a prior cycle, right? So in your illustration of payroll, hey, can I put last month's and last week's payroll stuff in?
That's so smart.
See if the result came out to be there.
That's way smarter than
then
live.
that second cycle is my live one, right? And so I've got a little bit of confidence, because if I want to compare things, I want to compare history where there's not pressure in the moment. And if I've got to dedicate time to building my confidence in this new system, I want to dedicate time that is able to be truly set aside and least interruptive. And if I'm trying to do that in live formation, I've got some external pressures that may make that difficult. If I'm doing that from a historical look back perspective, hey, I can set apart the last 3 hours of a Friday afternoon. Because, well, okay, you might not be at your sharpest the last 3 hours of a Friday afternoon, but you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah,
I can set aside time.
Right?
And it doesn't have to be confined based on other factors that are going on in a live environment, and use that for my cycle one test.
And also, when you're coming in that way, you probably aren't in the headspace of, I should be trying to do this on the other one. I think that historical data example, you know, I'm just running through my head of all the headaches that, I mean, 9 years, I never thought just use historical. It's always been like live versus live, trying to see what works. And I'm just a natural fire putter outer. So it's like, okay, we've implemented this. And it's like, no, it's on fire. It's on fire. And it's like, okay, well, I'll get it fixed when things are on fire. Mm-hmm. Versus I'll have the proactive big picture, but then the execution will usually happen when things are on fire. And so, speaking of fires, especially in an industry that's cyclical, like the tax industry, when is a good time for people to be considering changes? I'm assuming January 23rd tax season e-file opens next week is probably not ideal, or is it because it's before the crunch of March, April? When would you say is a good time to start exploring the changes in technology?
So it's always a good time to start exploring change. Executing change is a little bit of a different story, right? I think that we've got such a staffing issue in this industry and profession right now that we've got to balance how much can the staff handle with that exploration of change. Firm owners, especially smaller firm owners, naturally risk takers, and even though they're accountants, so they're naturally not risk takers, there is that kind of, hey, I run my own thing, let me go explore some stuff, right? Every firm I go to, I like to talk to the staff and say, hey, tell me how you feel when your owner comes back from a conference, and they just look at me and shake their head like, oh, 50 new things that won't work. Here it comes. Whatever. We're going to spend a week exploring these things and none of them happen. We'll get back to the way it was before and we'll get them out of that phase, right? We'll pat them on the back.
On my side, I love that.
So, and the owners love that excitement and the newness. The team's just like, oh, come on. What are we doing? And that's where it's always a great time to explore, but just to balance. What can the team truly handle? Because it's an emotional tax, play on words, for the team to go through changes. And when you're going into your busiest time, you want one thing from your team, confidence. And when the team doesn't have confidence, it slows production. And this is going to sound obvious, but it raises doubt. And anytime doubt is raised, now not just my production slows, but my decision-making is hampered. Like, ooh, wait a minute. I used to do it this way, but I don't know if that's right. Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. And all of those elements come up and really make for a bad, busy time. However, the busier your time is, the more you understand the impact of pain. So one of my firms that I'm doing some work with, I told them this. I said, here's what you're going to do during tax season. All of you as leaders are going to have what we call the paper of pain. It's probably actually digital, not real paper, not going to lie. But anytime something didn't quite go right, frustrated or irritated them, they're to go put it on the paper of pain. Because as you know, high volume and high production, that's a time when pains are magnified and we can really see their issues. However, in a typical firm, when we get together after tax season and we say, all right, what didn't go well that we might need to fix? The problem is there's so much happening and we tend to discount it. Well, it only happened 10 times, but I did 1,000 things. Therefore, it's not a big deal. Well, no, it's still a big deal. We need to address it. Or, well, it was tax season. I was just on edge. Therefore, we don't need to bring it up. And I've forgotten that it was actually significant, right? So when we're going through tax season, make sure there's a way to really let the team write down and share, hey, here are the things that irritated me. And we'll discuss it afterwards. We'll get a sense if something irritated somebody on the team only twice a week, but it was the same thing for all 10 staff persons, we might have an issue we need to deal with. And the result might not be a tech change, it might be a process change, who knows? But we've got to use the high volume time to identify some of those problem areas.
And right now, it's great that we're having this conversation right now, because in our world right now is our equivalent of April 15th. It's just nonstop. Everybody needs everything done as soon as possible. You know, e-file is on Monday. So everyone's like, oh, can I have it ready before tax season? It's like, I'd love to do that, except there's 300 people in queue that already bought before you did. So as much as I would love to just, you know, wave a magic wand, there's not any time in anyone's calendar. The solution to that is hiring new people, which then, do you want your onboard done with somebody who is brand new and they're basically experimenting on you? So, I mean, there's, you know, if I had to choose a problem, that would be the one. But when you talk about, you know, the busy time, it starts to highlight some of the pain points and some of the things that we were doing manually. Like one of the things, for instance, with commission in sales, if people were on a monthly plan, the way we did it was just, all right, we've got like 50 clients that are on monthlies. We know who all the clients are. It's only a handful of salesmen. We just know where everyone goes. We've got a sheet that says, if you forget, and okay, take a couple minutes to click through. Well, you know, fast forward a year and a half later, and now we've got over 1,000 on that. And I've automated the process from database lookups. And it's great because we had a programmer who ghosted us, and then I learned how to do it myself. And now it's like, I see all the other technology that comes along with it. But I saw that if we continued to grow, this would, you know, it would just incrementally, just one more. And over time, that's going to grow, which it did. And now, you know, looking back, it's like, thank God. And we didn't have to we didn't have to buy a new software for it. We didn't have to make changes. We looked at what was currently there and what solutions there were. And so, like, in my head, I look at it and it's like, is this the best way to have done it? Like, once a month, I have to change a couple things in the database just to make it flow properly. But it's also like that once a month, 2-minute job that I now have to do is saving us so much. I mean, it's like 50 a day that, you know, again, we're talking. And then the piece of human error that comes into it as well. So we saw that that could be an issue, solved it before it was an issue. Now looking back, glad we did. On the other hand, though, you know, we're running into, because it's busy and we're hiring new people, and okay, here's the process of getting everybody up to speed. Well, that process, you know, when everybody's busy, it's, oh, you didn't know how to do this one piece of it. Well, you should, because it's documented. Oh, well, just everyone knows how to do that except you. And so then it's like, we need to document this for the future so that the next time someone else runs into this and not just, you know, brush it off as, well, this is, you know, 2 minutes. Yeah. I'll show you how to do it.
All right. There's a bunch in there. Let me back up to something that you may not have even realized you mentioned. So you talked about the quick growth that's going on. I will say this, that firm owners and their leadership teams need to know what their goals are and what their focuses are. And I'm not necessarily saying what's our 3 and 5 year plan, but That's good too. But this year, what are our goals for this year? What's our focus? Because there are going to be a lot of choices that you have. We are not lacking of choices of things to fix or things to do differently. Where we struggle is what's the priority versus what feels urgent in the moment. And we need something objective to hold that up against. And really it comes down to, hey, what are the goals we're trying to achieve? And if we're trying to accelerate client growth in a certain area, then we're going to look differently at client database items than if we say, hey, we're actually trying to get rid of some clients and increase our, you know, revenue per client and the services that we sell to the clients. We're not taking on a whole lot of new clients unless we cut one out or replace one for one. Well, now an update to something of how we track data in a CRM may not be as critical for me. It may come down the priority list a little bit because I'm not looking to grow the number of clients. So therefore the frequency and the iterations reduce. So know your goals and where you have them. Accounting firms and documented business processes. There's a big gap in terms of the number of firms that exist and the number of firms who have their processes documented, right? They just don't. And I understand why, because everybody already knows what they're doing. So why do we need to document the process? Because of turnover, because of change of how we're using technology and what's happening or what services we're offering. And yet we have been so busy. Who has time for that, right? Well, there are great tools out there. And several firms that are just saying, hey, you know what? We're going to go to, I'll name a vendor. I'll just go to Loom, create a quick video in here, store it internally. It does a you know, free accounts, easy job, capturing my screen, capturing the webcam. Away we go. It's internal, should be low pressure in terms of speaking accuracy, if you want to have it that way.
Yeah.
And some of the visual impact, and say, hey, let's, as we come up to something, let's document all of our processes. And some of that comes down to, and where the hesitancy comes from is, what's the difference between teaching someone how to do a tax return versus what's our business process for doing a tax return? Like those two are fundamentally different. And we start to blur those lines. And we go, oh, this is too much. We'll just tell them how to do it. Well, great. Who's going to train your next new hire? Well, let's see. Do we give it to our most experienced person in a time where we're struggling on staffing as it is, and we need that experienced person to produce, else we're all going to get behind? Well, maybe we should give it to the person who was last new because they're the most familiar with the way we're supposed to do things. What if we didn't have a chance to cover everything with them? And who trained them? Who said that was right? All right? Maybe we'll just have the person who they sit next to train. Well, how many firms actually strategically, physically place people in their office thinking about that from a training perspective? Not very many. So having a documented business process for everything that we do, I think is really important. First step, list all of them that you need to document. And then as you have time, as you make priority, say, hey, we're going to document one of these a month and just get through your list. It doesn't have to happen all tomorrow. You just want to make progress on it. And as you come into technology issues and problems, it also gives us a place to go back and say, hey, where is this technology really used? And now I understand maybe what the scope of that change is internally. And that's part of our evaluation for how aggressively we have to go after that change. So a couple things from your comments there, Andrew.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea of using Loom and just having it document the process as you go through, you know, that's actually one of the things that we do. And when someone is new, I've got just a training library of, here, I was training this person at this time. The process hasn't changed. Watch the video, and you can also get the benefit of watching it on like double speed. So, you know, I'm just the type of person that's like, okay, get to the point. Like I listen to audiobooks on like 2.5. It's like, okay, let's just get through it. I can follow along with fast.
Do you live in
talking.
New York, Andrew?
No, but I can I can go along with some of the best. I heard this guy speaking the other day, and he was the fastest talker I've ever heard in my entire life. Right. And just blah, 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 blah. And I remember thinking consciously during the guy's speech, I was thinking, I'm so glad that I listened to Audible on double speed. So like I can follow along with this, but I'm curious how many other people are here right now just being like, what? How does someone do that? It was like an auctioneer just like flying. But having that documented, and even though it's not the most formal, you know, here is step by step in an LMS with a module attached to it and a test at the end with all these things, is it perfect? No. However, I spent hours showing one person one time how to do this, and the exact same thing with some variation is going to be told to that other person. Then there can also be the point of, if I missed something on that first go through, I can then just add, here's something that I missed when I trained that person too. So having a documentation, even if it's kind of haphazard, having something I think is going to far outweigh having just nothing. And you don't really, yeah. I mean, we had very, very low turnover. It was the same 10 people for 2 years. So it was like, do we need to document all these processes? Like everyone knows how to do their job. And then in like 1 month we hired 4 people, and it was like, I keep having the same conversation. So like on the third person, I was like, I'm going to record this. And then the fourth person was just like, here, go watch this stuff. And then they got up to speed.
You know, we've mentioned the staffing crunch in the profession. And I think that some firms get nervous about, hey, when I bring a new person on, I want their onboarding to be perfect and I want it to reflect the firm very well. I think sometimes we oversell the expectation of the new hire. I think here's what the new hire wants, just from my conversations with some college students as well as some recent hires in firms, is, hey, I want to know that first, you're able to walk me through what I need to use to do my job so that I can do it well and that I can look good while I do my job. And then I want to know that there's something I can go back to, because I'm not going to be able to absorb it all at once. I want to be able to fall back to it. They're not as concerned about the aesthetics for how the firm looks. They need the training to help make them look good. That's what they want, right? And so we've got to kind of put ourselves into the mindset of that new hire, and that should help us kind of say, where are we adding effort on creating some of this documentation that is just not necessary, right? They are more concerned that your tech tools look cool than your training about your tech tools looks cool. So, or that yeah. The tech tools exist for some firms out there.
yeah. It's like, oh, here's Excel. And it's like, you don't have any formulas in here. It's like, no, but it's just a nice organization for the ledger. It's like, that's not what Excel does.
So don't document your business processes in Excel in a spreadsheet either. I've seen that a couple times. Not my favorite place to see
yeah,
that.
Yeah. When I said something is better than nothing, unless it's in Excel, then it's then you're just as bad. Unless Excel is like, you've got links to something else. I could see it in that capacity, but I'm assuming you're saying like, here's an Excel document. Actually, we had a bunch of acquisitions years and years ago, and one of the companies we acquired, their customer database was a single Google Doc, and you would just control F to get everyone's information. And it was like, in a Google Doc, like you could have at least done a Google Sheet, which, you know, like we could at least export this to a CSV. It was just a document, and they just put all the customers' notes in everything. And like, yeah, it worked. And thank God they only had a couple hundred clients, because like you had to manually enter it. There wasn't an export parse Word document for this thing that was, and they didn't even have format behind it either. So you had to just chunk by chunk. They did have double spacing between between names, but yeah, so you know, some people maybe just aren't cut out to own businesses, or should at least have a conversation about, you know, and kudos to them for growing as much as they did without having anything in place. And when you've got 10 clients, it's easy, but 400, it's a giant nightmare.
I think that brings up a good point, is that we all have different strengths and skill areas. And when we talk about technology change and business process evaluation, there should not be any kind of negative stigma that comes with saying, I need someone from the outside to come help us with this, right? That's not a reflection of failure. That's a reflection of recognition of, hey, I'm really great at executing the work. I'm a great salesperson. We have a ton more clients and a bunch more services, and we've outgrown our workflow tracking system, right? I'm a great hiring manager and a people developer. My people are growing and doing more. Okay, now I've got two different layers of review that's going on underneath me, and we've got to look at how we're working through those processes, right? So bringing someone in from the outside for looking at technology, looking at the business process that's in place, it's not a failure. It's really saying, hey, I'm living into my strengths. We're doing these things over here really well. Now I need to make sure that the supporting areas are up to where they need to be so that what I do well gets the results that we want to see and it's maximized.
And, you know, playing to your strengths, it seems so obvious, right? But I think people will look at, well, this costs extra money, but at the same time, like, you could have guessed right, or you could have guessed wrong. And then we get into the sunk cost and the trying to fit the square peg into the round hole. And, you know, in my example with the signature software, you know, the foundational software that was behind all that, it could only integrate into said software that can't do Yahoo, ATT, SBC Global, which, you know, they don't advertise that. But it was literally the only choice that we had without changing the foundation of the company, which was picked 9 years ago, where the, I forget what it cost then, call it like $15, $20 per month. It was like, this is great. I prefer this over Salesforce. It was like $150 a month. And it's like, accomplishes the same thing. We're small. I know all my customers, blah, blah, blah. And then we're like growing. And it's like, oh God, I wish we had Salesforce. Yeah. So, Will, I want to be conscious of your time. We hit on so many great topics during this conversation. And I wish we had it 9 years ago so I could just kind of get through my skull. You know, avoid some of the pain points that I had to go through so that I had anecdotes to share. It would have been great if I could just say, yeah, I had consultants to help me with all my tech stack, and I don't understand what you do because I can't feel those pain points. But where can people find more about you?
Yeah, website is simply willhillconsults.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. I stay fairly active out there. Feel free to drop me an email. Will@willhillconsults.com as well, Andrew.
Fantastic. And guys, if you enjoyed the episode, be sure to share it. We'll have the clips up on LinkedIn in a couple of weeks. We had the live stream and I could generate the numbers afterwards, but it was great having you on the show, Will. And I got so much out of it. I'm sure the listeners did as well. And you have a great day.
Excellent. Thank you for having me, Andrew. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Tech Talk for Accountants show. I hope you enjoyed today's guest. And remember, you can go to tech4accountants.net/podcast to book a complimentary IT audit conducted by a technician certified by the AICPA in cybersecurity. Again, that's tech4accountants.net/podcast.